www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5, and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, is the United States on the verge of a civil war? This is a question that many are asking as the schism in that country increases. On Saturday, there were nationwide No Kings demonstrations where millions of people turned out. Americans are saying no to what they see as authoritarianism on the rise from the executive branch of the government. Increasingly, Americans see their rights weeding away, so much so that some now even carry their passports with them out of fear of being picked up by ICE. What is happening in the United States? Stay with us.
In what was billed as the largest single day of protest ever in the nation's history, millions of protesters took to the streets in almost 3,000 cities and towns against the right-wing policies of President Donald Trump. The protest was so big that even Trump and Republican Party leaders have been compelled to respond to it. They renamed it the Hate America Rally and sought to portray protesters as all being far leftists. That's even though the United States has far-left parties which are mostly unknown, and even though few consider Democrats to even be as far as the center-left, having lost the working class in recent elections.
I think it's they demonstrate every day that lack of conscience is their superpower. Their ability to lie is frightening, and they lie about things that are easily disproven, and they don't seem to care. And I think that's really scary that they seem so confident that they're going to stay in power that they lie with abandon like that.
It's not just traditional liberals and Democrats coming here. I was traditionally a Republican. I voted for McCain. I voted for Romney. But I'm deeply ashamed of how the Republican Party has evolved. And I'm here to protest all the unconstitutional violations that the Trump administration has committed.
The protest was titled No Kings, a reference to America's anti-monarchical liberal democratic revolution of 1776. Perhaps the biggest motivation for protesters has been the unprecedented immigration raids, which has non-white Americans walking around with their passports out of fear of being apprehended, even if their family has been in the U.S. for over 100 years.
What I'm concerned with the most is that there's masked, unidentified people who are just taking people off the streets, and there's people also impersonating them, taking people off the streets, especially women and children, zip-tying them. And then there's the people that were missing from Alligator Alcatraz, like 1,500 people, and it's just not okay. That's not what America is.
The federal government shutdown also may have boosted anti-Trump turnout. It is now halfway to the longest shutdown ever, which was 35 days, as Democrats have dug in to try and save Obamacare health subsidies in the world's sickest nation with the world's most unequal health care system.
Polls show that Trump is at his most unpopular point yet in his second term, with an approval rating of just 37%. His approval rating on economic policy is at his lowest point in either of his two terms. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Wilma Leona, political scientist out of Washington, D.C. John Stepling, author and commentator out of Inderøy, Norway. Well, thank you both for being with me. Good to see you, Dr. Leon. Your thoughts now. With this No Kings demonstration, they're saying that it drew about 7 million people. Let's talk about the makeup of protesters. Is it specific groups you think, or you feel that this is just across the board dissatisfactions by American?
Well, good evening, Ms. Hashimi, and great to see you again.
Thank you.
It's not only the size of the march, the estimated 7 million people, it's the fact, I think, that the protests span across the entire country. The data that I've seen in terms of turnout seems still to point towards more white and middle class, as opposed to there being a larger contingent of the working class, people of color, and the poor. That signals to me that the Democrat Party has not been able to reclaim the working class and the poor contingent that has supported them for so many years. I think it's a mistake for a lot of people to assume that because Donald Trump's numbers are as bad as they are, that will then result in an increase in the favorability rating of Democrats, because for as bad as Trump's numbers are, I think the Democrats' numbers are just as, if not worse.
Interesting point. What about that, John? I mean, your thoughts, and Jenna, when we look at the United States and what is happening, do you see this growing schism between just the politicians in general and the American people, or just the parties, for example, now against the Republican Party and Trump? I mean, what's your analysis of that?
Well, I think looking at the protests, they were overwhelmingly white. These were very white protests. And it's interesting because it is immigrant neighborhoods, Latino neighborhoods, and even black neighborhoods that have borne the brunt of ICE agents running around the Trump's Gestapo, essentially. And I think this genuinely offended a lot of people, though, across the board. The ICE immigration raids are very, very unpopular. And there's been actual kind of resistance against them. Nobody likes masked, anonymous agents coming and just rounding people up. And the agents are kind of out of control. They've crashed cars and hit pedestrians and all kinds of excesses. But the protests are not, they're in a sense something that has always existed. They are an expression of this dislike of Trump's style and manner more than being any sort of substantive political analysis that drives these protests. There's no discussion of foreign policy. I didn't see any Palestinian flags, no pro-Venezuela, Lee hands off Venezuela. I didn't see any of that. This was a kind of the liberal gatekeepers out there kind of clutching their pearls about the Trump's sort of style and presentation and his vulgarity, and it is offensive, and the government is shut down, let's remember, which I think can be one of the causes of this massive turnout. But this was not a protest. I mean, there's a genocide in Gaza. The U.S. is threatening to invade and bomb Venezuela, who is a country that has done nothing to the United States. And so you wonder exactly what drove this. It was a massive protest, so there were different elements. It's hard not to generalize because there were different factions and people behind this organizing, but there was a lot of mainstream money and a lot of mainstream support. Hillary Clinton was a cheerleader for these protests. The Democrats were all on board. And we have to remember Obama's immigration policy was not largely different, but people liked Obama. You know, Obama was drone assassinating American citizens, but nobody got upset the way they are upset about Trump, except
Right. Again, right. They're
not upset about foreign policy.
Right. Well, let's look at that. I mean, well, when we look at, let's see what John has just said, you know, we look at politicians or presidents over the years, and yes, most of them had more of a Democratic cover to them instead of Trump. And Trump is very obvious and blunt with measures that he had taken. But at the same time, as John has said, there were other presidents who've taken similar acts. So my question to you is right now with this, for example, mass demonstration, is it more more set up towards like a political pressure valve to relieve some of the pressure or the dissatisfaction amongst the electorate? Or how do you see it?
Well, I see it as multifaceted. And what you've just articulated is one of the elements of this. I think that there is still, unfortunately, this overwhelming mindset within the Democrat Party that they don't have to put forth substantive agendas, that all they really need to do is run against Donald Trump and tell us that Donald Trump is a clown, Donald Trump is a fool, Donald Trump is an authoritarian, all of these kinds of things that he himself tells us and demonstrates to us every day. And so I did not see out of this, for as large as the turnout was, to John's point, there was no consistent political substantive theme about what to do. It was, we can't stand you, Donald Trump. We don't want a king. Okay, got it. But now what are you asking those people to do? When they left Chicago yesterday, when they left San Francisco yesterday, when they left D.C. yesterday, what were their marching orders? No pun intended. What were their marching orders? I don't know that there were any. And so what I think could turn this into something seriously substantive, which I think they are intentionally omitting, is to join forces with, for example, the Black is Back Coalition, with the Uhuru Movement. If the No Kings people were to form an alliance with the Black is Back and the Uhuru Movements, that then could become something incredibly substantive. In fact, the Black is Back Coalition is going to have a march on the 1st of November. Where will the No Kings people be relative to that?
Right, right. Well, you know, it still just shows the divide in general that is taking place in the United States. And I mean, John, when we look at basically, as you said, what people were asking for, it's as if that the so-called democracy in the U.S. that people feel, okay, so we have the right to protest. We go out and we say that this is what democracy looks like. Tell me what democracy looks like. And then we feel good. And as Wilmer said, though, there seems to be no end in sight, no substance, just to everyone to get out and feel like they've done something, but actually not looking at the overall system itself, the neoliberal agenda that is the main problem of what's happening, not only in the United States, but much of the world. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think your other guests made really good points, and I agree with all of them, actually. The U.S. public has been indoctrinated for 80 years. The post-World War II anti-communism that drove policy, both domestic and foreign, has never changed. And we see the defense industry spending $6 billion a day or something more than that, actually. We see the weapons shipped to Ukraine. Nobody votes on that. Nobody really wanted that. Nobody even understood it. But they have stoked this Russophobia. People are split with the Gaza situation. People are genuinely offended and have woken up to the crimes of Israel, of Zionism. But there's still a kind of lingering, you know, Islamophobia in the American public, too, and certainly in the Democratic Party. I mean, look, you've got Bill Clinton and Obama and Joe Biden. These people were, you know, horrible presidents. They were imperialist. They did just as many illegal things. They pardoned their friends in the same way. Trump is just more openly corrupt and ignorant in a sense, and that's part of the red meat he throws to his MAGA base, and that white nationalism. It's like the revenge of the unhappy, unemployed white guy in America. But there's no understanding of the causes for this. All these people are anti-immigration, but they don't understand why immigrants have been displaced and involuntarily having to move around the planet. There's no understanding of what are the causes for this. And again, you know, we see Trump has gone back on everything, like all presidents. He's gone back on everything he promised: America first, no more foreign wars, et cetera, et cetera. He can't wait to have a new war. You know, they're vaporizing fishing boats off the coast of Venezuela, and people more or less accept that this is an attack on narco traffickers, and of course, it's nothing of the sort. So it's a frustrating situation because the Democrats are every bit as corrupt as the Republicans. It's just a kind of a battle of optics, in a sense. People, the middle class is offended by Trump. They don't like him, and rightfully so. But they never criticized Biden. They never criticized, you know, mass incarceration before Trump. People complain about alligator Alcatraz, but the U.S. prison system has been racist and corrupt for 100 years. I mean, right. it's a frustrating situation. But I think what you said earlier is correct. This, in a sense, is a pressure valve. It releases a lot of pent up anger and frustration, and people will feel better about having gone out and you know, waved flags and stuff. And then they'll go home and resume their normal lives.
Okay, well, Wilmer, you said something earlier about basically too, that it was a very white demonstration or not that many people of color. Is it possible that there is a more of an understanding with the non-white community of the makeup of this, that we're not just talking about, okay, anti-Trump or against the Republicans, but it's the whole system? Have people gotten there or... No, you see it in a different way.
No, I think, first of all, I think it's very important to remember that we're on the front end of this process. And so these things develop over time. And so we're at the front end here. And as the economy continues to contract, which I believe it will, when we get to December, when we get to the holiday season, and folks are struggling even more to do what many Americans traditionally do around the holidays, spend money, that's going to be a signal. When we look at January and February, as I believe the economy will continue to contract, that's when I think you'll start to see a greater sense of discontent and more people joining the movement. At this particular stage, I think that there are still a lot of people of color who say, y'all voted for this guy. We didn't. This is your problem, not ours. And that, I think, will start to change as well. We're at the front end of this. And also, I think, so long as the narrative continues to be developed and articulated in a partisan party context, you will continue to see this divide. John's earlier point, both parties are complicit in the crime. A lot of what Trump is doing, whether it be Venezuela, whether it be Gaza, whether it be Ukraine, came from Democratic administrations. So now the Democrats want to disavow a lot of their involvement in it before Trump got there. Trump, to John's point, is just more crude, just more crass, just more honest about the imperialist nature of his policy. But a lot of this isn't partisan policy, party policy, it's American policy. That's right. Why, and I'll end here, Dr. King told us that the war in Vietnam has played havoc on the domestic destinies, and the bombs that fall in Vietnam will explode at home. And that's what we're seeing now.
Well, staying with you, Wilmer, I mean, isn't that part of the reason that we see this big pushback by the Democrats? Because, as a matter of fact, Trump has actually exposed everything. What they would do, it would be in the cover, as I said earlier, of democracy or some type of political niceties or words that they would use. But Trump just comes out blatantly and says what it is, you know, like Canada should become part of the U.S. or whatever. I mean, isn't that part of this reaction that we're getting from the Democrats themselves?
Oh, yes, that is part of it. But another element of it is that the Democrats have been grasping for a message. And initially, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, it was the Epstein files. Oh, you have to release the Epstein files. You told us you were going to release the Epstein files, and you haven't. And we shifted now from the Epstein files to the medical insurance issue, which is a critically significant issue. But I still have to ask the Democrats, what are you offering the American people that will substantially improve their quality of life beyond the insurance issue? They have no message. They have no platform. They have no policy. All they continue to tell us is Donald Trump is an idiot. Donald Trump is a dictator. We know that. Give us something substantive that people can latch on to.
Right. Well, John, I mean, Wilmer said we're at the front end of this. I want to look at Chicago specifically, because around 300,000 people protested there. The mayor there called for a general strike against the ultra-rich. Let's talk about that and how significant that is, and perhaps can this movement actually end up becoming a uniting factor, again, with the, if you want to call them, the 99% against the 1% of this class struggle as Americans continue to suffer economically.
Yeah, class struggle. That's a word that was conspicuously absent from these protests, unfortunately. And that, of course, is the underlying truth of this. There are people out there fighting for Obamacare. Look, I live in Norway. We have universal health care here. As an American in Norway, I still find it remarkable that, I don't have any medical bills whatsoever, none, for nothing. And Americans are can't really afford Obamacare. There's no jobs. Unemployment is way higher than the official numbers suggest. And yet there is a reluctance to, if you start speaking of universal health care, the majority of people say, we don't want socialism, we don't want communism, because they've been indoctrinated for 50 years. And Reagan pulled the plug on public education, and we're seeing the results of that today, because part of the reason there is no articulate, substantive message coming out of these protests is because people are just shockingly politically immature. And they don't know how to think about these issues beyond electoral politics, which is just a circus. You're voting for one or another millionaire every 4 years. But a general strike, that starts to become something of importance. That if that were to catch on, and that we had 10 general strikes in all the big cities in America, that might trigger the beginning of some kind of political awareness, I think.
All right, I have 1 minute. Wilmer, do you think the United States is edging closer to a civil war?
Edging closer I'm still reluctant to go that far, but what we, because again, we're at the front end of this, but American military forces are pointing guns at American citizens in American cities. Citizens are losing their health care. They are their spending is much less, and Donald Trump wants to spend $40 billion of our hard-earned tax dollars to salvage Argentina. These aren't good indicators. I'm still a bit reluctant to talk about civil war, but if things continue down the track they're on, yes.
All right, and on that note, I thank both of you for being with me. Wilmer Leon, political scientist out of D.C., John Stepling, author and commentator out of Norway. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pit.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Youth Station. This is Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be at your service in here and here with me.
This is Brother Ali. Thank you so much for having me here as well.
Thank you very much, you dear listeners, for being with us, and thank you for giving us this platform to share our perspectives with you well. So, once again, we're here to be talking about something which is perhaps the concern of all the youth from all around the world. So, first of all, wherever you are, in each and every nook and cranny of the world, I hope you're doing well and everything is just fine with you. As long as it's autumn, I guess it's just so cool. So, how are you?
I think I'm doing well. Preoccupied with life and, you know, work and everything.
Just let's get very directly into the core of our discussion for today, which is migration.
Yeah, migration.
I guess there are many people. There is a myth of migration. There are many people who would love to actually go to the United States or... let's call it the West, because there are many people who have lived in the Eastern societies who would feel that there is this dreamland in which you are going to get all your dreams done, and then everything is going to be so cheery and so happy. And they have this very illusionistic perspective of the future, I suppose.
Well, when I hear the word migration, at least as you put it correctly, when I think about the word, I cannot stop thinking of the people who want to migrate from their city. So I imagine them as a couple of, you know, a bunch of, you know, refugees who wanted to run away from whatever they have experienced in their own countries, mostly in like third world sort of or undeveloped countries, to the dreamlands like the West or the collective West, United States and Canada as well. And I guess, yes, sometimes when people, they do not have or they do not find any solution for their problems, they migrate. They just leave their homes. And it's not something easy.
But, you know, the thing is, I have seen many of these people. And the thing is that the process that they have to go through, the process that they have to undertake in order to get into that dreamland sort of destination that they have in their mind is not an easy process. Like if they have gone through half of what they did of drudgery to get into there in their own homelands, they would have done something so great in their own lands.
I have heard that if you cannot be successful in your own lands with all the the things that you are familiar with, so there's a zero chance for you to be successful in your destination,
because in the other place, in the alternatives,
because you're going to have like twice challenge upon you,
sure,
in comparison to your homeland. So again, it's a, or maybe sometimes in some cases people go there, something magical happened to them. We have that cases, but for the vast majority of those people who are immigrants, I think they're going to experience a huge deal of, you know, shock. And
it's not easy. We're not talking about something which is easy. It's not changing your room. It's changing your country. And then, since you're going to miss your family, first and foremost, important thing that you're going to face is the fact of feeling so homesick of the people that you love so much. And this is not going to be the ending point. By the way, we always, when we talk about migration, because this is not the first session we talk about migration, we've had a host of other episodes discussing this matter. But the thing is, most of the time what we consider is the drawbacks and the less fortunate stuff that might happen to people. But there are also this situational irony that's happening in here, that while there are many people who would wish to give half of their life in order to get there into the Western, let's say, dreamland countries that they have in their mind, there are people who would love to migrate from that West dreamy sort of place in order to get into some other less problematic areas. Mm-hmm. We go for a break and then we'll come back to see what's going on.
Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Sometimes migration happens because you have to, because something is at a stake, be it your mental health or your peace or maybe even your spirituality. So for some specific reasons, sometimes migration is a must. Welcome back. This is Youth Station and we're talking about migration vividly. So we got to this point of this irony that I was just talking about, that while there are many people who wish to get into those dreamlike countries, actually the perceived dreamlike countries, there are many people of those countries who would wish to change their own country because of the problems they're facing in their lives. And right now, I guess, by the advent of media, the world has turned into a real small village, and now you could see all the problems that you might have a realistic perspective of everything. If you're not a delusional sort of a person, you would see things pretty vividly. Like, it's not like that the people who are living there in that dreamy sort of destination, they're not having a perfect life. They're just human beings like us. They suffer from educational system issues, or perhaps they're going to have some societal issues, most importantly. Also, they face too much of problems with their neighbors if they're not of the sort of normal, ordinary people.
Yeah, and in some cases, we can see that they are constantly are having this challenge of why those poor people living in like African countries or Middle Eastern countries, why these people are so happy, like they feel like content about their lives. But we have these, I don't know, Mercedes-Benz or Bugatti or other luxurious sort of cars. We don't feel content. We don't feel satisfied.
They have the luxury, but they don't have the contentment.
Exactly. And I'll give you an example. I have one friend here. He's a Jew, and he used to be a Jew, and now he reverted to Islam, and he lived here around the city of Qom, and he used to live in New York. So I was interesting that I was asking why you feel like you have to change your religion and then come back here, living in these so-called third world countries in the world, in this part of the world. And he was saying that the life was not enough for me. Like, I had everything, but I guess something was missing. Something so deep was missing. And in these Eastern countries, in this East part of the world, I came to seek that meaning of the life, something that fulfilled, something that filled my heart and, you know, soul. And the other day he was saying that I'm participating in this traditional sort of Iranian sports, like Zurkhaneh, we call it. And I was teasing him by saying, you become like more Iranian than I am. I haven't been there.
Yeah.
It was interesting for me that he's into these traditions as well.
Yeah. So it's very interesting that there are many things that us, the Easterners, have got in our tradition in our culture, but we take it for granted, while the other people who are the strangers to us, when they come to our countries and they see it, they feel that maybe this is what life has to be defined. This is how we have to define life. Sometimes it's not about the amount of facilities you have, mm-hmm. but it's about the contentment and the peace that you might feel inside, in the core of your heart.
I think it's just about the broadened perspective that you put in your life, and you see that life, I mean, it works culture-wise, it works for both sides. Those people who live in those countries, we like Middle Easterns or African countries or Chinese, they can develop and find some good aspect of their lives as well from those people who are Westerners. So we're not going to be total biased, right?
Yeah.
But, and I appreciate those people who just move for whatever they think, because some people, they just, you know, they just sit around and they do nothing about their lives. But I appreciate those people who take the risk and, you know, go for seek whatever they want. They are the discoverers, in my opinion.
Yeah, part of the adventure lays there, I guess, in seeing what the other roads might offer you and provide for you. You know, there is something which is very important. We're not being so much of perfectionists right now, and we're not being perfectionist people who would ignore the realistic part of life. Like, yes, it's true that sometimes economic pressures might actually push you into making a decision that is not your favorite, but you have to because of the condition.
Yeah.
For those conditions, I guess, because you know that some of the countries are suffering from war and some others are suffering from different issues. Like, it's not easy to be a part of Eastern societies and countries.
Whenever you reach to this conclusion that you have to migrate, the same story with the in the dawn of Islam, when Prophet Muhammad ordered or asked people to just move from Mecca to Medina
exactly.
because of the conditions. So the conditions was like, we have to be realistic. The condition was not okay for the Muslim, majority of Muslim to leave, to preach, to practice Islam. So they just migrate, and that migration was like one of the greatest things in the history of Islam. It changed everything,
yeah.
right? And so, but again, we cannot, forget about the difficulties that they have, these people who traveled from Mecca
they
to Medina.
They suffered a lot, actually.
They suffered a lot.
Yeah.
Like, they treated as a second citizen in Medina as well. But eventually...
And they were excluded from everything, actually.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. But eventually, that migration becomes one of the major events of Islam that help Islam to be spread in the most part of the world
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, and just as your friends, that you, one of your friends that you mentioned, him, there are many people who would leave their so-called perfect countries for some other purposes, like for spirituality, for religiosity. So I think this one is very much respected and worthy of attention.
Yeah.
They leave everything behind just because they're searching for something really bigger and much more important and significant.
Yeah, they feel like something is missing out, and they are willing to go for it. Because so in so many cases, we pretend that we are the discoverers of the soul and everything and the meaning of life. They totally are ready, and those are the ones who seek for the meaning of the life. They're not
yeah.
just opening a book or doing a case study research. They actually go for it. They pay the price.
Yeah, they're being the case study itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you like to migrate?
Migration as in going there forever? Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Ask me.
So I think after talking about migration, I would like to ask you, do you like to migrate ever?
Well, my realistic response to this would be like this, that yes, to go and see the world, to have another experience, another life experience would be very interesting. But then I'm the kind of a person who feels that she's got some roots in her homeland.
Mm-hmm.
So I can never forget about my city forever and like turning my blind eye to it forever for the rest of my life. No, but that would be very interesting to have experience. I guess this is one of the verses of the Holy Book of Quran, to go and seek around the world and see what has happened to other nations and what has happened in different parts of the world, to have a broader perspective of what life is and how people of the other parts of the world would look at life. So generally speaking, I think that migration in itself is not a bad thing, but it depends on how you look at it. If you have this degrading perspective of yourself and of your own identity, I don't think wherever you go, you would find that peace that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But if you are actually leaving your country behind for some much more important reasons, or for some really perfect goals, then that would be perfect to come back to your own country and lend a helping hand.
Yeah, I agree totally, and I cannot turn back to the traditions that I have, and nothing can replace home for me as well. I might go around, discover the world, but I want to come back again soon.
I usually wonder that for people who feel like land is just a piece of a land, how this idea has been fostered by these people. Like, it's very not easy. It's very difficult to forget about your country, the place that every alley of it, every detailed stuff in it has been a witness to your growth. So this is very difficult to leave it behind and to just forget about it. So I do believe that if you do not feel too much of attachment to your own homeland, you probably have to do self-research and to figure out really how do you define your own identity, because that is a major part of it. This was all for today's episode. I hope you have enjoyed that. Until another episode of Youth Station, wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum
warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Travel to a historical city, the goal is not just to visit museums and beautiful monuments, but you want to mix with the locals and learn about their traditions and culture. In recent years, many historical houses in Iran have turned to accommodation places, which are called Rumgardi. These are neither hotels nor hostels. They are local traditional houses that provide the opportunity for their guests to meet with locals and live like locals, even for a short time. Narteti is the first house we visited, a beautiful place in the small town of Taft, with several traditional elements. An Iranian Zoroastrian couple owns the house. Traveling also means doing activities that we would not have done elsewhere. Each night, all the travelers who stay in this cozy place meet with the owners of the house, drink tea, and eat freshly picked pomegranate from the backyard. And so, they can experience a little different trip and realize that we all share the same fundamental values and same objectives. We're all part of the same planet, and this makes us stay connected.
Staying at these kinds of places adds to one's understanding of the world and understanding of people. It is something which gives you an understanding that all of us are the same. We're all people. We're much more similar than we are different. And when you start taking governments and other things out of the situation, it's just, we can enjoy being with each other and understanding each other and learning about each other.
Another differentiating element of the house is a wall full of memories of those who stayed a while in this place. A very interesting wall that takes you to a journey around the world.
Une nuit dans cette maison est particulièrement et une expérience particulièrement enrichissante puisque ça permet de partager ces expériences entre les différents voyageurs qui se croisent ici.
In Iran, when a guest or loved one leaves our house, we accompany him or her to the door and throw water to show we want him or her to return very soon. With this compassion, we left that beautiful place to discover other local guest houses. The second place is the House of Baran, which means rain in Farsi, a beautiful adobe house that truly represents the city of Yazd. A very simple house, but artistically decorated and perfectly designed with traditional Persian elements, that constantly reminds you of the peaceful spirit of Iranians. A beautiful house with very positive energy. There's a logic behind the location of every piece in decorating this guest house. Some of these elements are symbolic, and some others are still functional.
This house has lots of interesting features for me as a visitor. So Abbas, the owner of this guest house, had to adjust the stairs and make them more comfortable for us, people of modern age, to be able to walk down. Because apparently, back in the old days, they were building these stairs very high. The underground room, and there is about 15 to 20 degrees Celsius temperature difference comparing it to upstairs. So making it a perfect room to chill and maybe take a nap during the hot days of summer. Also during the cold days of winter, this is gonna be a very warm room and area of the building. Few steps down and tiny little room, even gets cooler. Ideal, perfect place to keep your fruits and vegetables during the hot days of summer. Natural cooling system. You know why? Because it's connected to the wind tower room.
There is always a time to say goodbye to even the most beautiful things in this world. What you take from that location or moment is usually what you see or experience towards the end. An unforgettable taste with a beautiful color and very exciting recipe create an experience that I will take with me from Baran Guest House. The exciting thing about all these traditional guest houses is the fact that they're all different in some ways. One is famous for its traditional elements, one is known for its design and decorations, and the other has some very moving stories about the people who lived there, the people who run it now, their families and their relatives. Local people of different regions of Iran, full of love and passion, the most hospitable hosts that I have ever seen in my life. Jahangir Guesthouse is one of the few places that you can have a unique experience of meeting local elders, hear their stories, and learn about their experiences.
One of the benefits of staying at local guest houses is to have a chance to have this first-hand experience of seeing local handicrafts being made. You see the whole process, and you have a chance to see the craftsman who's behind this precious product, behind making this precious product. And I really enjoy interacting with people, talking to them, and of course learning from them.
One thing is to hear or imagine how life was back in the old days, especially inside these gorgeous traditional guest houses. Another thing is to live the life of those people and those days. It might be some very simple acts or even sometimes symbolic, but they definitely worth the try. It feels amazing. Shahryar Azimi for Iran.
Aquí Teherán, la voz de la República Islámica de Irán.
Sal, Estimados oyentes, ahora escucharán las aliyas 60 y 61 de la sura de Anfal del Sagrado Corán, recitadas por el señor Rahnema.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.